Stand back. There's a hurricane coming through.
Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com is with us on the program for his weekly visit. We'll take your questions for PK, all Titans questions at 615-737-1025. PK, happy Wednesday morning to you. How are we doing?
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Joe. Hope the frat party wasn't too much for you last night.
Well, I didn't go, but, you know, Brennan was supposed to, you know, stay with me here in the hotel that we're going to move in today. And of course, you know, he got scooped up to go party. And I'm like, okay, man, don't be rolling back in here. You better find a place to crash on some couch, because I don't want you rolling back here at 2 a.m. when I got to wake up, you know, early to do my show.
Disturbing your pristine sleep.
Yep. Exactly. Yes. I mean, this beauty, this does not just come, you know, with a little bit of moisturizer. I mean, I need the sleep. So to his credit, he found a couch apparently. So good for him.
Good for him.
Yeah. Off to a ripping start to the sophomore year.
I have a Dolly Parton story.
Okay.
February 20th, 2004. I proposed to young Teresa Tassona, and as part of the night that I had
planned. Who was a saint, by the way.
Yes. As part of the night that I had planned, we went to what I believe is called the Capitol Grill. Does the Capitol Grill still exist? It's in the fancy hotel with the marvelous men's room.
Never heard of it.
It's kind of over near the Capitol, shockingly. You know, and they did the rose petals on the table and everything. I told them what we were celebrating coming in when I made the reservation, all presuming that she would have said yes earlier in the evening, which she did. And so we had a lovely dinner, but over in the corner of the restaurant, Dolly Parton was entertaining a group of 8 or 10 other women. And they were having a big time, laughing it up. You could hear her infectious laugh over there, and we found it pretty funny. Still very much not southernized as a Philadelphian and a New Jerseyan. And so we finished dinner, and I said, look, given the occasion, let's break the Nashville rule. And so I went over and I stood by her shoulder until there was a pause, and I introduced myself and I apologized for interrupting. And I said, I never would have interrupted, but we are celebrating our engagement. I just proposed a couple hours ago, and she stood up and was so excited for us and so enthusiastic and took a picture with us, which I have no idea where to look for at this time, but it is somewhere prominent in our files. But I thought the funniest thing was when I sent this picture around in the days or weeks later, my friend Julio in New York said, why would you guys have taken a picture with a cutout of Dolly Parton? And if you look closely at the picture, it kind of, I mean, she was so well put together, and proportionally, it kind of looked like a cutout of Dolly Parton. And her house now down kind of on Crockett Road or whatever Crockett Road turns into is just beyond our new mission parish, St. Olga. So maybe she's helping us recruit members now as people ridiculously drive by her house. This desperation to be in contact with someone's property after they die, yeah. I can't relate to at all. But obviously a great loss. And the highlight stuff that was flowing around last night, she did a top 10 with Letterman.
Oh,
her top 10 pet peeves. That was just phenomenal. So
universally beloved.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Terrific.
Very good story there, PK. Appreciate you sharing that. Take more of your questions for PK. Your thoughts on Dolly Parton at 615-737-1025. All right, let's get into Cam. Not a especially inspiring performance again in preseason game number 2. A lot of discourse from Titans fans in the aftermath of all that. I was talking earlier, like I watched basically a film breakdown that Kurt Warner put together on Cam last night. And it just kind of feels like his footwork is still kind of all over the map a little bit. Like he's got his feet pointed, you know, at one spot. The arm angle's coming at a different one. And it just, there's a lot of inaccuracy right now with the football. And some of them, like some of the balls are being completed, but they're not being put in the spot where you really needed to put to maximize the run after the catch. So, PK, I look to you as the voice of reason in times like this.
Well, thank you.
The general overall discussion about Cam Ward, what we've seen in the preseason to this point, where he is right now as a quarterback, how concerned Titans fans should be, where do you come down on all that?
There is plenty that you can attribute to lack of scheme and them being vanilla. But in the framework of vanilla, what do you want? You want execution of some basic stuff. Against, by the way, Seattle's second team is not scheming. And the execution has been insufficient. And look, Helms should catch that ball, yada, yada. But what happens is what happens. And they do not have an air yard completion over 7 yards, which is ridiculous. They have 6 air yard attempts over that span, 6 offensive series, 1 per series. How can you not be concerned by that? Even schematically, like, why wouldn't you be doing that? Robert yep. Saleh says, well, we could scheme up Carnell Tate if we want. Well, you know, I'm not saying the guy's not confident or whatever, but, you know, in my history of watching guys, you tend to want to get the rookie first round wide receiver ball in his hands somewhere in the first couple weeks, especially when he's kind of been flailing at practice as well. On the Cam front, it's just not enough to lend confidence, I certainly to the fan base, which isn't your primary concern. But the more you leave it for a switch to flip on opening day, the more pressure you're putting him under, you know? And I'm not saying that Sam Darnold is outright honest when he was praising the defense, but after the practice – he was saying, well, that defense was really disguising things and throwing a lot at us, which makes it sound like practice wasn't particularly vanilla. And they did pretty well in practice. I thought the offense looked good in practice, which is a reason to take heart, by the way. But if the Titans can do well offensively in practice against Seattle, why can't they, when all of the good guys sit down for the game, do better than that? I don't need to see anything glowing or whatever, but you got to make some plays, and they didn't make some plays. And frankly, if you look at the 3 biggest plays they didn't make, again, I know everybody wants to blame Helm and blame Tate and maybe blame the officials for not calling PI. And Gunnar Helm can get his feet down there, but that ball could also come a little bit earlier and a little bit more inside and say, hey, this is a tight end, not a wide receiver, right? The play to Tate should make that catch, absolutely. But also, could it be a better throw and a more handleable throw to Tate? Yeah. And the play to Isle Manor, you know, is there room over the defensive back instead of into the defensive back where Isle Manor has to come back and catch it and you're relying on the officials to make a call? Yes. So does Cam have a little degree of responsibility on all 3 of those plays that could have been better plays? Yeah, it's a combined thing. So, you know, everybody's saying, well, you're making the headline Cam and it's really the offense. Well, you know, completing passes – starts with a quarterback.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's the vernacular. I asked the guy, do you want me to change the whole vernacular because 3 guys didn't make plays for Cam? And I should say the offense didn't complete these passes as opposed to the quarterback didn't complete these passes? When for the eternity of football we've talked about the quarterback completing passes? I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's all fair. Would the conversations be different if Tate – I do think Tate should have caught that, but you're right. It could have been a better throw. It didn't have to be where it was. Helm could have been a better throw. Would the conversation be different if those 2 plays were made by those 2 guys not named Cam Ward? I mean,
maybe a little.
It'd be a little bit less severe, but it's still, again, it's like I think the people on the Cam Do side want
you keep
to,
using these terms. Like, if you don't reclassify at the beginning of every show or the beginning of every segment, I think you're really overestimating people understanding your baskets.
Well, we don't have a disclaimer that a cranky old jack wagon's coming on the show every time you come on. So let's let you talk. So I think we're okay. The people on that side of the debate want to isolate it, right? It's like one preseason game, and it's not. I mean, it's a continuation of overall just not good enough performance by him.
I agree. And also, I mean, again, like I said, if you're looking for a complete switch flip against the Jets, that's not really the best way. The best way is steady progress, right? And you say, hey, he's ready for this because we've seen some good things in the preseason. And, you know, Blake Bedingfield, when he was getting ready to write his review of the Seattle game, texted me. He said, do they look this bad in practice? And I said, no. But, you know, we have to properly – I didn't say this, Blake, he knows. But I think as a community, we have to properly weight things. And so that he's better in practice against a familiar defense in a comfort zone with the offensive coordinator oftentimes standing over his shoulder or whatever, knowing, you know, I've got 6 reps here or I've got 3 reps here or whatever is a lot different than the practice against the Seahawks is a lot different than a preseason game against the Seahawks. We have to weigh these things differently. And the weightier the things have gotten, the worse his play has been. I would say with the exception of the Seattle practice, I thought they were pretty good against Seattle in that practice, keyed by really good run game stuff. Like there were a half a dozen plays in that practice where, you know, the offensive line turned one side, turned the other side. It was like a Moses-type deal. And running backs all the way from Tony Pollard to D'Ernest Johnson, 3 teams deep, 2 teams deep, were getting substantial holes. And you were like, that is a big-time run game that we, again, didn't see. I mean, Pollard and Spears combined for, what, 14, 18 yards on 4 carries. It was as if they didn't want to rely on the run game, which makes you think again, oh, well, they're going to pass it and get some things in order in the passing game, and they didn't.
615-737-1025. Lots more to get to with PK. We welcome your questions on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Paul Kuharsky with us from PaulKuharsky.com, taking your thoughts and questions for PK. Somebody called in wondering about the intensity of the joint practices, what all goes on there, how do you compare to an actual game, all those things.
Look, it's an intensive practice with ones versus ones, twos versus twos, et cetera. You know, there'll be a long period. You know, you'll see the first team go, you know, as much as maybe 12 plays in a burst before it's relieved. There's a special teams period somewhere in the middle. There's a cool down break somewhere in the middle. But there aren't a lot of drills. I mean, I wrote a story about how Salah and the league seem to be trending away from 9-on-7 run drill, from 7-on-7. Like there was one 7-on-7 period with Seattle and Tennessee, and I think it was 3 plays, 3 plays, 3 plays, first, second, third team, and then they get on. It's more 11-on-11 than it's ever been. But, I mean, it has a scrimmage-like feel to it when they're in the thick of a big period. There's just no tackling.
So did Cam stink? Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to ask if Cam stunk yesterday in your eyes, PK.
In my eyes yesterday, he didn't. I have to say I was late, and I was not as attentive as I usually am as I was conversating. But he threw a couple, and the offense threw a couple picks, and I think it was a defensive day.
There you go. So good on the secondary front, on that front. On the Ward ball security. So we talked about this a little bit earlier in the show. I mean, there's the play against Seattle where he's running around. He's got the ball hanging behind him. Defender dives, bats the ball out of his hand. It goes out of bounds. Fumbled the ball 11 times last year. I think he lost 7 of them. That's a large number for a quarterback. Have we reached the point where that's a big concern with him is taking care of the football in the pocket, out of the pocket, as he's running around back
there?
Yeah,
I think, you know, this is a thing where the clock should be a little bit faster in terms of his improvement. And I think there's kind of a nonchalance like, man, the guy made a really good play. Well, you can prevent the really good play pretty easily by securing the ball better. And your fascination with the hero ball play, which, look, is a great element to your game. I mean, that play to helm is a terrific play and something the Titans absolutely need splashed into their offense. But, you know, he's made a play a game that if the ball had bounced a little bit differently would have qualified as Levesian.
Nice.
And they can't have that. And so I think I think both he and his coach were kind of super forgiving on both of those. And if those happen against the Jets and the Jets are a little more fortuitous, you know, it turns into seven or it sets them up for seven or three and they can't be given away easy opportunities for points. And he needs to button that down.
By the way, real quick, just because I'm going to lose track of these as the text line continues to pop, I just want to throw these in because I know PK obviously loves these. Someone threw in there, everyone needs to calm the hell down. That's not bad.
Is that going to be a category for you now, or does that not break through?
No, I just like to give a little credit there. But Dennis did point out that if he doesn't have a good season, we're all going to be in the wham, bam, thank you, Cam club. I mean, shout out to Dennis for that.
Dennis, that is high quality. I joined
there's some other
applause
yeah,
on that.
There's some other attempts that are bad that it will not be repeated.
Wham, bam, thank you, Cam is good. And Ian can work with that.
Yes, that's pretty good.
Yes, as hopefully he can work with cranky old Jackwagon too. I think that really that should be
you
your
really made him mad,
title.
I don't see that lining up with an existing song. That would have to be an original composition.
I'm just saying it should be your title.
Yeah.
Do you have a football question for PK?
Yeah.
Do I? No, go ahead.
Nah. Who cares about any of that stuff?
Whatever.
Level of concern that Tate doesn't have a catch in the first two games.
I'm not concerned, but I mean, he's definitely in a lull right now. And separation has not been his strong suit here, and that was the concern coming out. So they have to scheme him open, throw him open. And, you know, that's where, like, you're just going to wait and flip the switch on that against the Jets, or right, should you sample it a little bit here?
Well, is that, I would be sampling, are you seeing that bit. Are you seeing that consistently, PK? Because I mean he's got to be a good route runner, right? I mean, he's got to be a route runner. Yes, in these games, you know, like he hasn't been wide open. I mean, the probably the worst Cam throw that he sailed on that crosser, I mean, he wasn't open, but
yeah, but did he do the right thing? I think is a fair question there, because that ball landed at a spot. I've seen some good film of this with discussion, like where that ball landed might have been where Carnell Tate was supposed to be.
But I mean, I feel like getting off press coverage is a common rookie thing we talk about, and I think that's been part of the story here, right? That's something you have to just improve at, and sometimes rookies take a little bit of time. But as a route runner, I would think he would be able to get separation and, be available more. I mean, as a in practice, what are you seeing in that way?
You know, better than what we've seen in the games, but he's very familiar with Flott and Taylor at this stage and other guys that he'll see. And Flott and Taylor haven't been at their best, Flott in particular. And, you know, going against them for 3 weeks now is different than squaring up against somebody else, even a second-team Seattle DB, apparently.
On the defensive front, it was not a great night for Kevin Winston the other night. There's the blown coverage for the long touchdown pass, you know, the run right up the middle that – somehow the Titans allowed for 70 yards.
Every guy on defense botched that run. Marcus Harris was terrible. Cody Barton was terrible. Winston was terrible. I have concerns about Winston. Like, not that I don't think he's going to be a good player. I just think Titans fans are so desperate to love people that they've pre-anointed Kevin Winston before we've actually seen him do anything. And yep, I think he's a little bit reckless and a little bit overzealous and needs to be calmed down.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And then, I mean, we brought up all those concerns with the offense against Seattle's backups. I mean, that defense was horrible the other night in that game.
And I have to point this out, and I think, you know, Jeff Simmons and I got along a lot better last year, and I think Jeff Simmons made some huge strides. But and I didn't talk to Jeff Simmons personally after the game, which was kind of a cluster. But Jeff Simmons on the quote sheet said, yeah, we played pretty well. And you can't go back to that. Jeff, that's a big step back, right? We never, you never ignore the two big plays that you guys make. You can't ignore two huge plays that you give up and say you played well. We're not going to excise the two plays that lead to a huge defensive failure. And when you're giving up a massive touchdown on a busted coverage and a massive touchdown run to a fifth string running back, you did not play overall pretty well. You played overall pretty bleepy.
Well said. Yeah, that's exactly how you lose football games. Do you have? Is it confirmed then? Because obviously that was an exchange that was messed up on the pass. That was Winston was supposed to be with the Royal.
Well, here's the thing. I was talking to TD about this on the sideline yesterday. I mean, I think if it was Winston that was supposed to go with the Royal, it would have been very easy for Salah to say that. And I think that's easily our presumption that the safety should go with the tight end, right?
But doesn't he just want to not actually call out a player like most coaches do in this situation?
It could be that. Or it could be a wrinkle where they actually were flip-flopping and the corner was going with the tight end and he doesn't want to give up that was a unique coverage thing. So, I mean, I think flat out we just don't know.
He said he was glad it happened, though.
Yeah. That's interesting that he says that and I get what he's saying and all of that. I'd like that to be square before the game.
615-737-1025.
Am I crazy?
No, I don't think so.
Is that too much of an ask?
I was really glad they gave up that touchdown there. That was good.
Hey, guys, go out in this series and see if you can botch this coverage so that we have tape.
Tackle the running back? No, can't do that. Do not do it.
More with Kuharski coming up next. We'll also give away a spot in our fantasy football league. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Paul Kuharski with us here on the program, taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. The Nashville Sounds taking on Jacksonville today. First pitch at 6:05. Catch all the action on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, and Social Cantina. We will give away another spot in the Robbie and Rex Road fantasy football league later this segment. So make sure you're tuned in for that. PK, we've gone through a lot of what happened in the last preseason game. We got one more week of training camp coming up this week. Chicago's coming into town. The final preseason game coming up later this week. And then we get into New York Jets talk over the next couple of weeks here with the Titans. It was very interesting to read Blake Bedingfield's kind of breakdown of what he saw from the game at paulkuharski.com. And we went over a lot of the Cam Ward stuff. I continue to be encouraged by the reports and what we've seen on the J.C. Latham front. And, you know, with the caveat that being that, you know, the regular season, you still have to see it happen. It feels like the Titans offensive line as a whole may be in a better spot than we thought heading into camp.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think particularly run game-wise, though we didn't see a lot of it in this game. I now go from, and I'm getting ahead of myself, but, you know, I've been a buyer on Latham since he's come back. And now I'm not only expecting big things from Latham, but maybe two big things from Latham, but also now looking to him to carry, too strong a word, to help bring Carmona along. Which, you know, you go from last year, and this is too much for me. I'm admitting that on the front. You go from last year thinking, like, is J.C. Latham going to be anything more than, you know, the equivalent of Dan Moore on the other side with this unreliable, unsteady, inconsistent play to, you know, I think he's now got the potential to look like the seventh pick in a draft to – he could look like the seventh pick in a draft and bring Carmona along. You know, that's a hell of a turnaround in short order.
Yep.
So I'm trying not to get carried away. But, again, I remain very enthusiastic about what J.C. Latham has done so far, J.C. Latham's mindset, which I think is a huge key to his whole thing because we know he's got physical gifts and strength and can maul. And I think – it's fair to say that line as a group for some time has lacked the mentality. I wrote a story last year, like, do you have to be mean to be an offensive lineman or have a degree of mean, or at least have a degree of mean amongst your five? And I think you do, though guys were saying it's not the same as it used to be. But who's the snarl on that offensive line? I mean, Skoronski's a very good offensive lineman, but I think Skoronski as a nice guy carries over into Skoronski as a player. Yep. He's not standing over the pile like Ali over, was it Norton?
Sonny Liston?
Liston. Thank you. Right?
You're welcome.
Who's most likely to do that amongst the Titans offensive linemen currently? I think undoubtedly it's Latham.
I'd agree.
And I think they need that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more interested in just, you know, just being a competent player. But yeah, I mean, a little nasty is not a bad thing in an offensive line. Someone asked earlier about Dan Moore. The fact that we haven't talked much about him in camp, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, that's a win.
I mean, as you see, as you look at him, does it look about the same? Do you feel like he's... I mean, I think we'd all agree, like, he's fine, he's okay. Could it be better than that?
Yeah, I think he's fine, he's okay. You know, again, he's faced two defenses that have not rolled out their top rushers. And San Francisco's not a good rush team.
No.
I remember last year, Saleh had a defense that was minus a bunch of guys that were hurt. Well, Bosa wasn't out there, and they're – best draft guy wasn't out there. You know, the substation is taken down 25 guys. And so that wasn't a real test. Yeah, the owner is at trailer parks doing crazy stuff. Seattle, you know, I think they did reasonably well against Seattle's frontline guys in practice. And, you know, I don't think the pass rush was a big reason for Cam Ward's problems in the game, and those were second teamers again. So I don't think we've seen Dan Moore in a lot of situations where he's been tremendously challenged, or any of them in terms of pass rush. And that's so there's the cautionary tale on us being enthusiastic about the offensive line. They've run blocked well against predominantly second teamers, and we've not seen them face premier rushers.
On the defensive front, I watched Cody Barton play, and you know, I would throw Hooker into this too. We've talked a lot about Hooker. I watched Barton play, and I keep coming back with the same conclusion, and I think, you know, he just feels like he's about step and a half slow to get in there. Not that he's, you know, not that he doesn't know where to be, not that he's confused all the time. I'm sure he's got great leadership qualities, all those things. But I look at him, and I'm just like, hey, it just feels like he's a step or two slow. And the NFL, that's a problem. Like, that's all it takes. Do you agree with that? Anthony Hill has a big game. Now, it comes against a bunch of backups, so you have to keep that in mind. What do you make of what that situation could look like as the year goes on? Have you seen enough from Anthony Hill to make you think at some point this year he can challenge to start?
I mean, I think it's a universal opinion among those of us that cover the team closely that we'd rather watch Anthony Hill's rookie struggles than Cody Barton's late arrival. Now, I don't think we're going to get that right out of the gate. The comparison I'd make is to Nate Davis, who played behind Jamil Douglas for a month before they felt like he was ready as a third-round pick. Here's a second-round pick. Also depends on how Barton does. Now, Cody Barton, you know, he looks almost kind of old. He's going to turn 30 on November 13th, which is not old, but I think for his skill set, is he losing a little bit of his athleticism, which wasn't spectacular to begin with? I think maybe that's fair. Amani Hooker, I love. As a guy, I think he's an absolute stand-up guy. It's not a great quote, but he's a stand-up guy. But last year he never said, I haven't played well, which disappointed me. And I think he took it as circumstantial. Now, sometimes a guy needs to tell himself that in order to sustain things, right? And I'm understanding about that. And maybe that's Amani's situation. Amani was never Kevin Byard, but Kevin Byard's play sunk in his last year here and in what he did in Philadelphia after he left here. And then he went to Chicago and had a major renaissance. 2 or 3 years in Chicago, a very good football, like back all pro. And now he's in New England.
Yep.
And I would bet that Mike Vrabel and Zach Kerr know how to maximize him again. I would expect good things from Kevin Byard still. Now, Imani Hooker was never at that same peak. But can Imani Hooker have that kind of resurgence, or is Imani Hooker heading towards done? I think that's a big question for this defense. His leadership is definitely vital, but you can lead a lot better if you're taking better angles and doing things. And I don't know that his angle adjustment has caught up to his decreasing speed. And there's a good story right there that I need to do without maybe naming names. But, you know, baseball pitchers, when they lose their fastball a little bit, the good ones do what? They get craftier with their slow stuff because they've learned the strike zone. Do the Titans have a couple guys who are slowing down who are adjusting their angles based on that, or are they still taking the angles they took when they were peak performers?
Yeah, that's an interesting analogy. So Imani Hooker needs to become Frank Tanana. I don't know. I don't know how
comfortable I mean, I think Kevin Byard's become Greg Maddux. You know, to make it a better top flight analogy.
Frank Tanana? Who's that?
Oh, man. Tanana the banana.
Frank Tanana was a
he wasn't the best.
Well, Frank Tanana was a mid to high 90s fastball guy with Nolan Ryan with the Angels. By the time he got to my beloved Tigers, he was throwing Ephus pitches and like he was maxing out at 78 on his fastball, but he had all these breaking pitches. He beat the Blue Jays 1-0 in the season finale to win the division in 1987.
Played from 73 to 93.
Let's go.
Thank
like,
you for asking me about Frank.
Let's go like David Cohn, right? David or Brett Saberhagen. They threw gas. And later in their career, Saberhagen, I think, probably had Tommy John surgery. That's pretty safe. You could throw out a guy who had Tommy John surgery. David Cohn, though, became a craftier pitcher who had a set. Mike Mussina had a second act where they're just a craftier, smarter pitcher, and they've lost 5 miles on their fastball.
I like this, but also, like, I mean, I just think there's a limitation in football. To like, it's like, well, that's great. You can mentally, like, take a better angle, but if you can't run. I mean, some guys like, you know, Rod Woodson goes from corner to safety when he slows down a little bit, but he still can run. I mean, I'm not saying he can't run at all,
but I'm saying if you lose half a step, you have to do the geometry or you're showing up somewhere where the guy isn't. and they can't have that.
Nope. And real quick, I do want to make a quick point, sorry, on the Barton Hill thing. I hear what people are saying, and I'd rather, like, it's more fun to watch Anthony Hill. But see, the minute that turns into an obvious run fit he misses Busts. Or a coverage or whatever, and you give up a touchdown for a team that probably won't score a lot of touchdowns this year probably is going to need to rely on its defense to just be sound, that's where I just don't think you rush that.
Well, that's a little bit of fans and analysts taking one for the team now for the long-term good. And I don't know that Robert Saleh and Mike Borgonzi are in a position to really think long-term good in exchange for a win this September. I agree with you there.
615-737-1025. Caller number 9 in honor of Kuharski. Caller 9 will win another spot in the Robbie and Rex Road Fantasy Football League. Call or not at 615-737-1025.
I think that was 9. Might have been 8. Times.
I think it was 7. Times. We'll be right back, Robbie and Rex Road. 1025 The Game. Keep up with training camp, 1025 The Game, for the latest updates, player interviews, and more as you get prepped for the upcoming football season. Coverage of training camp presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants, Parma Tractor and Equipment, Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery, and Tri-State Water, Power, and Air. Paul Kuharski with us here on the program. Congratulations to John, who was caller number 9 and won the latest spot in the Robbie and Rexford Fantasy Football League. We got 4 more spots to give away, so fret not. You will have more opportunities. But 4 more spots to give away in the Robbie and Rexford Fantasy Football League.
Yeah, a league that unfortunately won't include Pekaris. He's too much of a coward. He's afraid of getting his ass kicked again. Sure. And by the way, Paul, yep. I'm not in the Titans Media League anymore. I don't know why you like sent me a text and have me.
Because we like you in there. Well, thanks for informing me.
Dude, I told you last year I'm not doing – I can't do all these leagues.
So this is interesting. Joe is bashing me for not being in your league while taking himself out of my league.
Exactly. No, I was already out of your league.
Hypocrite! Hypocrite! Do you have any, hypocrite music?
I was already not in the league. I was already not in the league.
You were in the league last year.
I was not, you jackwagon. Again, let me use that
term. Joe, I reactivated last year's league. And there you were. So,
hey, Paul.
So what do you think? Paul? ESPN secretly went behind your back and put you back in the league?
I know the internet's hard for you. I invite you to go back again and look through the standings, and you will find that I did not participate in the league last year any way.
Do you know that not participating in the league is different than not being in the league?
I was not in
the league. You see the difference there? Let's parse the language.
Ask everybody else in the league. I was not in it.
Bye week, Joe.
I can't do it anymore. Yeah.
Bye week, Joe.
Look, I know
we
that
had two bye weeks. Bye week,
the
Ben.
That's hard.
Bye week, Ben Arthur, and bye week, Joe Rex.
Jeez, we need better around
now,
here.
Now, look, there are two ways you could approach this. Ben Arthur has pledged he's going to rebound.
Okay.
Ben Arthur of Fox. He's going to rebound. He's dedicated himself the other day in the press box when it got boring. He said he was studying to be a better player in the league. And Joe is doubling down on, I refuse to be a part of this. Listen, if you refuse to be a part of this, then stop nagging me on when Robert Saleh is going to do a press conference that you can watch on TV and pretend again like you're the Athletics Titans representative. If you want to be the Athletics Titans representative, then you are in the Titans media and you're in the league.
I just felt bad for you that you had to sit there for a half hour after a terrible preseason game on a Sunday night. I'm sorry for having concern for you. I mean, your old ass must have been almost passed out.
It was.
That's
no lie.
What do we think of
a tired man? I can only imagine. My CPAP's working. I can only imagine how tired you are. Have you got that thing on your face
yet? What's happening with that?
CPAP, hold on. CPAP update with Joe Extra.
It's not going well.
What's our podcast called?
You're trying it and it's not working, or it's not going well as in I've totally abandoned hope.
I can't do it. It's like a claustrophobia thing that I can't do it. So,
I literally go to bed craving getting that thing on my face.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
It's a miracle.
People think it's
great.
That one, Ian.
What was our? What was our podcast name?
I don't know.
CPAP Brothers. It's better than that.
We got to rediscover what that name was.
Yeah. I think people are knocking down my door.
CPAP smear?
Well, that was way worse than what I said. Clip that. The ladies are just going to love that.
Got to exist, doesn't it?
Ladies love when you make fun of that. Yeah. It's one of their favorite things.
That'll go well.
Anyway, you're a coward for not being in our league. That's the point.
You're a coward for not being able to wear a CPAP for a night.
What do you think of the rivalry jerseys for the Titans?
It's fine. I don't understand how people are so moved by a jersey. People are weeping and they got to get in line to spend $450 for the real version of that so every game can be Halloween. You know my take on this crap. Titans just got new uniforms.
Which look good, by the way.
Yeah, they do, and they should wear those.
That's been the highlight of the preseason so far.
It's all a big money grab, and you suckers are falling for it.
What about the Texans? I mean, what about this?
I just wrote this, and I'm getting pushback from Houston already. Listen, if this stuff meant so much to Houston, I covered Houston, and Bud Adams, and them getting out of the lease in the Astrodome. There was no big push from Houston when this thing was going down to try to keep Oilers and oil rig and colors and stuff, and Bud probably wouldn't have had it. But the league could have intervened there. This is what happens with every single team that moves except one. And Cleveland and the league had the foresight to know what a big deal it was and to prearrange it. So, Houston, I'm sorry you didn't have the foresight to realize how much these things meant to you and to keep them. And if you want to put light blue on your new jerseys, go ahead. But this obsession with the thing, I mean – it's really funny because Houston is determined that they're correct on this, and Tennessee is determined that they're correct on this. And Houston couldn't be more wrong about feeling correct.
I agree. Totally agree. But they will never let it go, ever. PK, thank you for being with us.
Don't block the box and be sure to lock your locks. Read PaulKuharsky.com. See ya!
Hope everybody has a great rest of their day. Next man up with Jake Lyman coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.